realfaith.org.au.
So I just sort of looked at these kids who were looking at me, and there was a stunned silence, and I said, "I'm sorry, guys, I've got nothing." And I sat down. And, you know, the poor old youth pastor had to sort of get up and bumble along, and he was all embarrassed and I was all embarrassed, and I just thought, well, that is it. I am done. I'm never going to stand in front of a crowd again.
Welcome to Real Faith. Conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through. Helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life, and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Sometimes we go through little challenges in life, and other times we go through big storms. Well, our guest today faced some little challenges when trying to get into ministry and some big storms once he got there. But we want to focus on the most embarrassing experiences. Dave Reardon, welcome to the program.
G'day. Thank you, Eric.
Did you have a few embarrassing experiences?
I've had some moments.
That's what we want to zero in.
Yeah, right. Give everyone a laugh at my expense. Right. Good.
Well, I just thought, you know, it's so much nicer to hear other people's challenges than our own.
Sure.
So I'm glad you have a few tucked up your sleeve
for
us to chat about. Yep. But seriously, we do have some big storms. I mean, serious experiences you've been through as well.
Sure, sure. I mean, you know, before I got into ministry, I was a journalist and used to work for a number of newspapers. And, you know, storms were always those things that, you know, you'd hear the weather report. And if it was a really, really big one, a cyclone, a tornado or whatever, you'd wait for the phone call to come and get sent up on assignment up to one of these places. And I remember one time...
This was just a regular occurrence for you?
Oh, yeah. Several times a year. There'd be, in where I was in Australia, there would be a big warning. Well, one time there was a Cyclone Vance, it was, quite a few years ago now, and it was going to cross over the coast. And normally cyclones sort of peter out as they come across the coast and just dump a lot of rain. But this time it was going to be a big one. It was going to hit a little town called Exmouth. And so they sent me up sort of on the tail end of the cyclone, which was absolutely terrifying. You know, they put us in this little charter plane, and my photographer and I, we sort of flew in, and just the wings were banging around, and I wasn't sure we were going to make it. Anyway, we looked down on this.
Were they actually flapping?
Oh yeah, yeah. They looked like they were flapping. They were going up and down. I thought, I don't think wings are meant to do that, but they certainly were.
I would hope not.
Yeah. It was scary. Anyway, we landed in this town.
Did you maybe ask your boss, hey, are you sure we need to cover this one?
Didn't matter what I said. That was my job. Oh, yeah, okay. I was there to cover crocodile attacks, shark attacks, cyclones, and crazy billionaires who were doing crazy things. That was essentially my job as a reporter in a far-flung outpost. Yeah, the Wild West reporter I was. So we landed in this town, and it had been, I think, about 75% of the buildings in town had just been destroyed by Cyclone Vance, which was a Category 5 cyclone, one of the worst since Cyclone Tracy, which is the really famous one many years before. It wiped out Darwin. Anyway, and it was incredible. We just, you know, you spend the morning kind of picking your way through debris and rubbish and looking for people who have survived. And, you know, we found this one lady, Bernice, and we went to her house first, actually, and this house was just shattered. The roof was gone. Every window was broken, and spoke to one of the neighbors who was in there, and they said, this elderly woman called Bernice, and we were sort of fearing the worst. We said, well, where is she? And they pointed us to one of the shelters. So we went to find Bernice and find her story, and there she was. She wasn't taking shelter at this place. She was actually handing out blankets and handing out clothes, and her whole attitude was, well, there's people worse off than me. And I thought, I don't know how that could be, you know. And but as we asked her a story, she said, oh, yeah, well, as the roof came off, I hid next to the couch, and I just sung Onward Christian Soldier. She told us these hymns, the wonderful old hymns that she'd been singing, and said, well, if it's my time to go, then it's my time to go. And she lived, of course, and not only that, but very quickly, within hours, was looking for an opportunity to help others who were, in her mind, worse off than her. So it was just one of those little moments in journalism where you go, this is a hero. This woman will never preach on a stage, as far as I know.
And,
but what a hero. what a hero of the faith. So,
but what a perfect picture of the calm in the midst of the storm. Yes, literally. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because she had her faith in the Lord.
Had a faith, singing the hymns. Roof was flying off, you know, winds in the hundreds of kilometers an hour. Just terrifying. And she had that anchor that just tied her down to what was really important. And it really is a great story of what it is to be a believer. Because obviously listeners everywhere, you know, there are people going through all sorts of conditions.
Yep,
there are people who have their own natural disasters that they're living through right now, or personal disasters. Mm-hmm. Sometimes life's going along swimmingly, and that's fantastic, and we enjoy those moments. But often there's clouds. Often
and
there's
it
clouds.
It feels
dark
like the
clouds,
roof is going to blow off.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think as we read the Bible, you know, there's a reason why the Lord keeps reminding us to, you know, hold on to your faith and stick with it. Mm. And there's tough times coming. The reason is because there's tough times coming. There always is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
there's always something.
I wish somebody had warned me about that earlier in my Christian walk.
Yeah.
About the tough times. Well, speaking of tough times, you've had your share.
Sure.
We're going to get to some of those, especially the embarrassing ones. let's find out a little bit about your background.
Oh, well, yeah. As I said, I was a journalist. I studied journalism, marketing at university in Perth, Western Australia. And I'd really come to faith in university. I'd met some good people, and they'd sort of led me on a bit of a journey. I'd had a bit of a religious background, but the penny had never really dropped. And so it was an incredible time, really eye-opening to discover that God was very much alive and wanted to be part of my life. And all the while I was studying journalism, I got involved in local youth ministry and started helping out there. And
I understand you had some challenges.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we had some challenges. We had big challenges in, you know, there was just little funny ones along the way as well. Of, you know, the first time that when I was at uni, they about 3 or 4 weeks in, I have no idea why they did this, but they said, oh, we reckon there's a bit of leadership on your life. And so they said, why don't you become a life group leader, you know, home group leader, and you
really
can look
so
up.
Really? So you had just become a Christian a few weeks?
Absolutely.
But they thought you were destined for leadership.
They could see it all over me.
What happened?
Well, I got about 12 minutes into running a life group, and it was supposed to go for an hour, and there was a few young guys there. And I just shut the book, shut the Bible, and went, okay, lads, that's it. And they said, oh, that's a bit short. Should we meet back next week? I said to them, well, you can come next week. I'm not coming. And
it wasn't for you.
It wasn't for me. I was a disaster. I was the worst life group leader ever. And they actually did, to their credit, they did meet next week, and someone else took over, and they did a much better job than I ever did. But that's sort of, I was convinced at that point, no, there's no leadership in my life, and got involved in the youth ministry somehow,
You gave it a go.
Gave it a go, yeah. Beginning. Well, I wanted to do something, even though if I didn't think that I could. It's probably a good motto for life, isn't it? Do something even if you think you can't. So was helping out in the youth ministry, sort of became, I guess, second in charge of the youth ministry, and good things were happening. We were doing a lot of work with Indigenous kids, and it was some really good things happening. And lo and behold, somebody said, would you like to come and speak at our youth group, you know, across town? And that was a big deal, because I'd never really had that opportunity before. And so I thought, you beauty, I'll do this. And did all my preparation and turned up. I thought I'd done all my preparation. I turned up to the youth group, and there's all these kids looking at me, and they introduced me, and this is Dave from down the road, and he's doing all these great things, and he's going to share around the word. And I said, okay, we'll open up to Matthew chapter 12. And as I opened up my Bible to Matthew chapter 12, I thought, no, that's the wrong scripture. I must have got there. I said, okay, well, actually, guys, it's Mark chapter 12. And I flicked over, and No, it must be Luke chapter 12. And then I just sort of rocked on my heels as I realized I had no idea. I had no idea what, and I just didn't have any experience to be able to kind of off the cuff improvise, make something up, just say something good. So I just sort of looked at these kids who were looking at me, and there was a stunned silence, and I said, I'm sorry, guys, I've got nothing. And I sat down. And, you know, the poor old youth pastor had to sort of get up and bumble along, and he was all embarrassed, and I was all embarrassed, and I just thought, well, that is it. I am done. I'm never going to stand in front of a crowd again. I'm never going to speak again. I, you know.
That elusive verse. Did you ever find the verse?
Yeah, could have been in, who knows? Could have been in the Book of Moses, Book of Noah.
but yet you persisted.
Yeah. Look, I'm nothing if not stubborn. So so we did persist, and
you had nowhere to go but up.
That's right. Yeah, and all the while we're still working as a journalist, and met and married my wife, and she was a dietitian. And but there came a point where they said, "Would you like to come full time in ministry?" And we said, "Yeah." And then the state that we were working for came and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Would you like to take over the state?"
The whole state?
Yeah, the state, you know, responsibility sort of for the state youth ministries. It was...
So you had truly gotten past the point of being able to find verses when you...
Oh, occasionally, yeah, sometimes.
We're going to stop you right there because this is quite a long story.
A little bit,
okay. Well, we're going to take a break. We're talking to author Dave Reardon. We'll have more of his stories, more of his challenges of life when we return right here on Real Faith.
The Word for Today is Australia's most widely read daily devotional, designed to give you practical teaching to keep you focused on your relationship with Jesus. Read it online or subscribe to the free printed edition at thewordfortoday.com.au. You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo. Today, my guest is author Dave Reardon. We're hearing some of the challenges of life that he's gone through. And before the break, we were hearing about you had a massive challenge when you were appointed the leader of a statewide youth group. Is that correct?
Yeah.
We're going to get to that in just a moment. But first, I heard you preach a few weeks ago, and you mentioned something about getting an elbow from God. What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, I think it's just that reminder from God that He's with you. You know, there's the great story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego who are in the fire and were thrown in the fire without really an expectation that there was going to be anyone in there with them. But, of course, when the authorities looked in there, they saw not three but four men walking around the fire completely unharmed. And I just think it's an incredible illustration of the fact that whether we're thrown into a fire, a situation, a storm, something, you know, trouble in life, that God willingly gets into the fire with us. And we may not always recognize it. I think often we look at the flames and we look at the storm or we look at the rocks on the road and we're just naturally, very naturally troubled by those things. And then you feel that little nudge or, as I like to think of it, you know, the elbow of God.
The elbow of God. Very profound.
Oi, I'm here too. I jumped in willingly, you know. I got in here willingly with you, and you know, that's really Psalm 23, isn't it? That wherever you are, whether it's bubbling brook or the shadow of death, the valley of the shadow of death, or the banqueting table, that lo, I am with you.
Okay, and you had a very big valley of life challenge when you were appointed to
this role. We were appointed to this role, and what an honor it was. And you know, when they tapped me on the shoulder, I was like, do you know who I am? Like, you know, like,
did you hear about the time I didn't have a verse?
Yeah, you obviously haven't read my resume because it's not particularly impressive. But they did. They said, well, you come over and run this thing. And you know, we didn't have any money and the ministry didn't have any money, but it had a lot of prestige, I guess, in a sense. And so it was a big deal. It was definitely the biggest thing that we'd ever attempted. And my wife was, I think, about 8 months pregnant at the time and, you know, with our first kid. And so, you know, life was busy. But we threw ourselves into it and we were the first thing, the place where we were going to be kind of sworn in, I guess, was this great statewide event, this camp. And, you know, so I did all my research and it was my job to run this camp where, you know, this was the first thing we ever had to do. And so, you know, I asked around. They said, okay, well, 700 people come to this camp. We're like, right, okay, good. Well, I'll figure out the budget, $100 for the camp, for a four-day camp. And so I did my sums and we booked a venue and booked the speakers and the sound system, the stage and the lights and all those sort of things that go. And we did it really carefully and tried to, because there was no money Yeah, so we just had to, be careful and had to pay for itself, and that was important. And then we got a couple of weeks out from this camp, and I was really excited, and I went and had a look at the figures and spoke to the people who were taking the registrations, and I said, how are we going for numbers? And they said, well, there's about 250 people registered. And I thought, okay, well, a long way off 700. And so I thought, well, maybe they come in late. And another week went by, and we're getting pretty close now, and I went and asked the people again, and I said, you know, how are registrations looking? Lots come in. Yeah, yeah, lots have come in. We're at, you know, 350 people now, and I thought...
Halfway?
Yeah, halfway with a week or so to go. A couple more days went by, and it's kind of stuck on about 450 people, which is a great camp. Yeah, it's excellent. You know,
by any other standards, yeah.
Sure, but when you're looking at $25,000 of unpaid expenses, it was quite terrifying, and I phoned up somebody who was in the know, and I said, listen, when do these 700 people register? And he said, 700? 700? What do you mean? I said, well, the 700 people are coming to camp. Yeah, 700 people are coming to camp, but 250 of them come at night for free. So the most we've ever had is 450. And
you're
so
at that.
We're at that. We're, you know, camp's gone well. We're at the highest it's ever been. And I'm looking at a $25,000 gap, and nobody's got the money. And I thought, seriously, I'm going to be sworn in and I'm going to be sacked in
the
one
same
night.
Ceremony.
The same ceremony is going to be sworn in and farewelled in the space of about 5 minutes. And it was absolutely terrifying. And I think that's one of the things in life is, you know, we spend so much time about what will people say? What are people going to think of me? And, you know, I guess because, you know, I'm suddenly back standing in front of that youth group without knowing what to say and feeling all those insecurities rise up of, man, I'm no good at this. I'm terrible at this stuff. And but you know, my wife and I, we have seen God work at times, and so and it was almost like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They said, "Well, if God saves us, that's awesome. You throw us in the fire because we're not giving up. But if He doesn't save us, so be it." And so my wife and I kind of took a look at each other and went down the bank and talked to our bank manager and said, well, we need to take a loan, a personal loan from our home loan, $25,000. And the bank manager looked at us and said, great, are you getting a lovely new car? And we said, nope, we're buying a camp. And understanding that...
I guess he had never heard that before.
No, never heard that before. And it was scary because we were currently, our total wage at that time, our salary at the time was zero. We weren't getting paid by anyone.
Oh, wow.
And so we had a baby a month away and a mortgage on our house. And looking back, I go, was that naive? Was that foolish? Yep, it was. Hmm. But we were just really committed that this thing was not going to end in death. We were going to, look, even if it cost us 25 grand, we were going to do it. And so, you know, camp came around and a few more registrations trickled in. But really, they, you know, it's a camp. It's a four-day camp. You've got to order the food and get the beds and all that sort of stuff. So people, if they haven't registered a week out, they don't register. And we knew that. And so, you know, the time came. It was, we were almost ready to start the first service, and the 450 people had turned up and had their sleeping bags, and they were all locked in and ready to go. And I sort of walked out there. There's my 8.5 month pregnant wife, and she's taking the regos. And I look over at her, and I fake a smile at her, and she fakes a smile at me. And we're like, "Well, here we go. You know, it's our house on the line, but we're going to make sure this is a really good camp." And as I can see it so clearly. I'm standing there, and I'm looking out on the car park, and then suddenly this bus just rolls into the car park, and I thought, "Who's that? Everyone's here already." And the bus pulls right up, and this tall fellow by the name of Seth jumps down out of the bus, and he's a youth pastor, and he calls out to me, he says, "Dave, is it okay if we come to camp? Sorry, we forgot to register." And I thought, yeah, no worries,
buddy.
That'll
be all right.
Yeah, you can come to camp. I said, "How many kids you got?" He says, "Oh, we got about 50. I thought, that's awesome. That's wonderful. You know,
and they all have their money.
They all had money to pay.
Wonderful.
And then and no sooner had Seth and his mob pulled up, but two more buses pulled up, and a guy by the name of Mike jumped off and he says, "Dave, I've got two buses worth of kids. So sorry we forgot to register." And understand that this has never happened before and this never happened since. You don't turn up unannounced to a 4-day camp without registering. So I don't know what was going on with these youth pastors, but I was very glad for it. Well, the amazing thing was over the next sort of 20, 30 minutes, we had about five or six buses roll up completely unannounced. And off these buses came 250 kids, yeah.
Wow.
Which was exactly the number that we needed to get to 700. So it was the biggest camp we'd ever had by, you know, 30-40%.
Yeah.
Our house was safe. That was a big deal for us. You know, about to have our first baby. Our house was safe. And of course, the camp, you know, 700 young people, it was crazy. Well, I was really excited. My wife was really excited. But then it was almost like God sort of shushed us. And he said, wait, I've only just started. And then we went into these camp meetings and stuff just started happening in these camp meetings. And there was miracles happening. And, you know, we had, wow, had this one guy was all booked in to get his knee operated on. He had an ACL injury and all booked in for the Monday after camp. Mm-hmm. And during the praise and worship, he came running out the front, which is quite amazing in itself.
Yeah.
Jumped up, said, my knee's on fire. I just got here. Did a backflip on the stage.
A backflip
just to prove it.
Oh, my goodness.
And somebody else ran out. Josh, his name was, and he starts telling me a story. Dave, I had 15 warts on my hand, 15 warts. And he's got a twin brother, and his brother sort of nodded and testified. It was disgusting. And 15 warts, and as I'm worshiping, my hands are raised, these 15 warts just fell off his
while
hand.
He was worshiping?
While he was worshiping, which is kind of disgusting. You know, like, imagine being the cleaner, right? There's all these warts on the floor. But, you know, and then, you know, to sort of finish it off, you know, then all these kids just were so generous, and they gave him the offering and really set up that ministry for the next year. And people were giving their lives to Christ. And we thought, what a camp. What a remarkable thing that almost didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because we were so worried about what people would think of us.
Yeah.
And in the end, God just came through, not in the way that we expected, but, you know, 10 times more than we expected. So, and I guess that's been the story of our life the whole way, is that, you know, we keep bumbling and stumbling along, doing our best, trying to keep a good heart, and God just keeps coming through and through and through and everything we do.
But it just keeps coming back for me to Psalm 23. You were through the valley of the shadow of death, so to speak.
Yeah, felt like it. Yeah.
But then you experience, from the agony to the ecstasy of wonderful fulfillment and God coming through at the last moment.
Yeah.
Just like in a movie or something.
Yeah.
And your cup runneth over.
Yeah, our cup runneth over. That's exactly right. And you know, that's been our journey the whole way through to today, where we do what we do today, you know, writing and doing stuff on the internet and, you know, creating videos. And it's just been one of those things where, wherever our lack is, wherever we lack and whatever we lack in, it seems that God's hand is upon us, and we've been able to kind of pull success out of abject failure.
Wow. And then now I introduced you as author. So you're writing?
Yeah. So I've written a number of books, ghostwritten a bunch of books, but some leadership books, but also really felt challenged a little while ago to write a young adult historical fiction based in Australia, dealing with some race issues. And that's been fantastic. It's in all the bookstores, in secular bookstores, in Christian bookstores. It's called The Deep Enders, and it's been optioned for a TV series even, so we'll see.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. It takes a long time to make a TV series.
But the fact that they're looking at it.
Well, it's just nice that people are loving it, and it's gone really, really well. And I just really wanted to write a book where the characters, it's not a Christian book at all, but the characters are Christian. And I just thought that was really something that isn't seen in the literary world. Yeah. It's Christianity is often painted as a, you know, something negative or something sort of archaic. And I just wanted to go, no, this is a real positive. And so it was a joy. It took a long time to write, but it was fantastic and really thrilled with it, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your challenges and successes on today's program.
Thanks, Eric. Yeah, cheers.
Our guest today has been author Dave Reardon, and you can learn more about his historical fiction novel, The Deep Enders, at his website, davereardon.net. That's davereardon.net. Finally, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that he and his wife, Anne Reardon, have a tremendously successful YouTube channel called How to Cook That, with several of their videos going viral and thousands of viewers all over the world. Just one more way that their cup truly runneth over. Once again, their hugely successful YouTube channel is called How to Cook That.
You've been listening to Real Faith. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us again next time for more conversations about God working in the lives of people who put their faith and trust in Him. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.